Hello, I am Megan Tuttle, and I'm president for NEA New Hampshire. Today we have with us Congresswoman Annie Custer, and I thank you for being here and welcome.
Absolutely, Megan. Great to be with you.
Thank you. Before we jump into the issues, I know many of our 17,000 members know who you are, but could you take a moment to tell us a little bit about yourself and maybe describe your district?
Sure. So let me start with that. The 2nd Congressional District runs from the Massachusetts-New Hampshire border, so Salem, Nashua, over to Keene. And then it goes up kind of around Manchester. I don't have Manchester, but everything west of Manchester, and then up to Concord and up to the Upper Valley, and then all the way to Canada. So up through Plymouth, Northern Grafton County, Littleton, all of Coos County.
Mm-hmm. Great. So that's actually my district. I'm right here in Concord.
Oh, great. Great. And my own background, I am a product of the public schools right mm-hmm. here in Concord. Started out in kindergarten through third at Dewey School, then Kimball School, then Runlet Junior High School, and then I graduated from Concord High School. Mm. Had a fantastic experience there. Mm-hmm.
Great. I was saying earlier, one of my children has actually just started at Runlet this year.
Oh, so, great.
Yeah, I think so.
That was Runlet was a super school. I really enjoyed Runlet. We mm-hmm. had great teachers. And when I was there, it was 7th to 9th. And mm-hmm. so when we went to the high school was just 10th to 11, 12th. I think now it's 6 to 8 at Runlet and 9th to 12th yeah. together at the high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're running for federal office, not state, but I don't think our members would forgive me if I didn't ask about one of the biggest issues in New Hampshire for educator school funding. How can we assure that New Hampshire educators have the resources that they deserve?
Well, I absolutely think we need robust funding for our public schools. And there are a couple of different things that I can help with. Number one, bringing federal funding to New Hampshire, and there's many, many different avenues in terms of construction and support for teachers, support for, I've been particularly focused on the career and technical high mm-hmm. school programs, and just robust funding throughout the system, and I think you need that here from the state as well. The issue that I worry about in the state is the disparity from community to community right. with the over-reliance on the property tax. And so I think a statewide solution is the direction that you need to go. And then the other piece of this is what I'm most concerned about at both the federal and state level with Betsy DeVos and Frank Edelblue is their focus on the privatization of public education, using public dollars for private institutions. And I think we need to retain every single last tax dollar mm-hmm. for our public education.
Mm-hmm. Great. You just mentioned it, you know, speaking of Betsy DeVos, Frank Edelblue, we know they're no big fans of public education. They both are trying to dismantle it in their own different ways. We were able to defeat Commissioner Edelblue's voucher bill last year. We know it's going to be
congratulations.
Back this year. Thank you. It was close, but we know it's coming back. President Trump has made it clear that he's a fan of vouchers and privatization at the national level. So what are some other thoughts you have on, you know, private school privatization?
Well, this is where elections matter. Mm-hmm. And I think it's one of the biggest differences between the parties right now, given the approach of President Trump, Governor Sununu. I know that the Democratic candidates, Molly Kelly, all of our Chris Pappas and myself are all devoted to public education. I've talked to many, many, certainly the executive council, Democratic candidates, the state senators, and the House candidates that I've been campaigning with across the 2nd District. This is a real threat, not just to our economic future, but frankly to our democracy. Mm-hmm. Public schools were created to make sure that we have an informed electorate, and that people have the basis, the basic civics, the history of our democracy, how civil rights and the rights of women and other groups have been impacted over the course of history. And what I fear the most about privatization is that we will lose that public sense of going all the way back to our roots. a sense of caring for everyone. Mm-hmm. That's what our Constitution is about. We don't create this group over that group. We don't tend to divide. And that's really what led, historically, if you look back at World War II, if you look back, it started from dividing people, mm-hmm. us and them. And that is going on in our society from the very top, from the White House, from this president, trying to distinguish people. It started out the very first time he mocked a reporter with disabilities. And it's just been a steady march ever since, marginalizing women, marginalizing all females, frankly, marginalizing people of all gender. Just recently, the mm-hmm. most recent decision that he's put out about defining a person's gender based upon their physical traits at birth, and not giving any credence to what we know to mm-hmm. be true. Most recently on religion and the attacks on the synagogue, it just is a steady march of separating people. And what the public schools are all about is bringing people together, mm-hmm. teaching people that they're one of a group and that we all rise together.
Great. Couldn't have said it better. There's a lot of time across the nation and in New Hampshire spent on standardized testing. And we are the first state in the union where we're piloting a program to reduce the number of standardized tests in favor of locally produced and managed assessments that are integrated into students' everyday work. Mm-hmm. What role do you believe standardized testing should play in public education?
Much less than it is right now, that's for sure. I'm really distressed. Two of my sisters are teachers, and I'm distressed about the amount of time that teachers have to spend toward the standardized testing rather than the traits that are really going to make a difference in this society, in this economy, have to do with working together with other people, mm-hmm. problem solving, creativity, innovation. I've been so impressed watching my two sons coming through the public schools when they're not focused on the test, mm-hmm. but when they're doing the kind of problem solving, working together in groups. I don't think that this generation is going to need to retain all of the information. Mm-hmm. They need to know where to get the information because information is readily available, mm-hmm. but they need to discern information. They need to discern, is this a reliable source? Mm-hmm. Am I getting accurate information? They, under this president, they need to understand the concept of veracity and truthfulness. These are much more important skills to be mm-hmm. learning than for them to retain information to regurgitate on a test. Right. It frankly probably outdated within minutes of mm-hmm. learning it.
Yeah. I know that in Concord, as well as other school districts, they're piloting what's we call the PACE program. And when I asked my oldest son last year when he was in fifth grade, he came home all excited about it, one of his assessments, and he could tell me about it. And, you know, he said, well, why was it better? And, well, I actually learned something.
Right.
And I said, okay, well, that, you know, that's good.
When you think about how we do assessment in the workplace, so I have close to 20 people on my staff on the official side between the Washington, D.C. office and then three offices here in New Hampshire. And the type of assessment that we use is a learning tool for self-critique mm-hmm. and then working with colleagues. We have an annual retreat, and it's more based on learning about yourself, mm-hmm. how you learn, how you interact with other people, what are your skills, what are your traits that make you hesitate to jump in with a response or make you hesitate to make a mistake. For us, there are no critical mistakes if there's learning to be had from them. Mm-hmm. We're constantly working as a team. We're working under pressure. We're working with incomplete information. And how can we work best together, taking into account the personalities in the group, the mm-hmm. strengths and weaknesses in the group? And how can we learn from each other? And if we do have mistakes, how can we next time avoid that situation or be better prepared for it? So I think that type of assessment for young people is a really great skill to learn.
Yes. So Nashua's in your district.
Yeah.
And I was reading an article in the Union Leader last week that Nashua, as well as a lot of other districts across the state, are grappling with the issues of guns in school and the conflict between state concealed carry law and the federal gun-free school zones. Is there anything that can be done at the federal level to ensure our students and educators remain safe?
Well, honestly, I would expect that we may have litigation on this because just as an attorney, the federal law would prevail. But in the meantime, I think cities and towns are making their own decisions about how they're going, what protocols they're going to use. And I think the most important thing for keeping our schools safe is to make sure we don't have weapons of mass destruction within the school property. I'd be very concerned about people carrying weapons in school. That's what the whole purpose of the safe school zones is all about. And, you know, I think it's a complex set of solutions that we need. We need better mental health treatment. We need better access to mental health treatment. But we also need to take precautions to make our schools safer. And we need to make sure that people who have intent to do harm are not given access to these weapons. My opponent does not want thorough background checks. He's been very clear with that. And I feel very, very strongly that we need to plug the holes in our background check system, whether it's a private sale or a sale for a gun show. But I'd go further if we have a what we call a no-fly, no-buy. Mm-hmm. If you're a terrorist that's not allowed to fly on our airplanes, then you shouldn't be allowed MS-13 or whatever background you may have, intent to harm. You shouldn't be allowed to walk into a gun shop in New Hampshire or a private sale or a gun show sale. And in addition to that, I think we need to have hearings and investigate and come up with the right approach to what's called red flag, where people have concerns. What we see from these mass shootings after the fact is very clear indicators, whether it's the way they're posting online, whether it's their activities leading up to it, getting big sort of arsenals of weapons, big arsenals of the ammunition that they're planning to use for these type of attacks. And we don't have a way for people to identify this person is a threat, and we need law enforcement to become involved earlier in the process. So we're talking about, it's called red flag, and what it's about is if, and you could use the standard that is used for privacy in confidential counseling. If a person is a threat to themselves or to others, the counselor is allowed to breach the confidentiality to seek a safe resolution. And I think that standard is very well known. And it's been applied many, many times, and that's a standard that I would be comfortable. If you're a family member and you know that a person in your family or a person in your neighborhood or someone that you've seen posting online with threats to themselves or to others, that you would be able to go to law enforcement to seek an intervention.
Great. So New Hampshire is, I believe, the second highest average age we have that in the nation. The number of retirees in New Hampshire, we know, was on the climb. NEA New Hampshire represents about 17,000 members, but included in that is about 2,000 retiree members. And many of them are concerned about this administration's constant attacks on Social Security and Medicare. So when you're reelected, what are you going to do to ensure our retirees have a safe and secure retirement?
Well, this has been a big fight in this campaign to make it clear that I will always protect Social Security and Medicare and, frankly, pensions as well. But specifically to Social Security and Medicare, This administration, this president and the Republicans in Congress passed a tax bill. By the way, not one single Democratic vote. Passed a tax bill that was a boondoggle, in my view. It gave the greatest tax benefit to the richest among us. And by that, I mean the 1% of the 1%. It was the millionaires and billionaires and the vast corporate interest, the largest corporate interest, who, by the way, did not turn that tax break into higher wages for employees, but rather put it into stock buybacks to make the CEOs even more wealthy. It was a missed opportunity. I think we should investigate tax reform that would benefit middle-class families and small businesses. 90% of the jobs in New Hampshire are from small businesses. So then Mitch McConnell and the Republicans turn around and say, because they drove up the deficits, $1.5 trillion added to the debt, over $800 billion added to the deficits, next year will be a trillion, that then they want to turn around and use that as the excuse to cut Social Security and Medicare, as though that was the problem. Mm-hmm. And I think there's no better issue that defines the polarization in our society, with the wealthiest among us benefiting at every turn, mm-hmm. and people who are relying on their Social Security, having paid into it every single paycheck their entire life, relying on that for their retirement. And my opponent made the statement, Social Security is not a retirement system. I beg to differ. I have met people living on Social Security. It is not easy. Hopefully teachers have other savings to go with, but it is really tragic. Look, it's easy enough to fix Social Security and make it sustainable for the long run. We increase the cap on wages for Social Security withholding. There's no reason that we should stop at $128,000. People over that, making $228,000, $328,000, $428,000, are not having any more taken out of their paycheck than a hardworking family, two incomes, getting to $128,000. That's outrageous to me. And then with Medicare, what we should have done from the beginning, during the Bush administration, it was a boondoggle to benefit the pharmaceutical companies, that we don't require, it's called volume discount for pricing pharmaceuticals. And as a result, seniors pay more, taxpayers pay more, and the pharmaceutical just end up with more profits.
Yeah. Staggering numbers, really, when you
it's
say
incredible.
Them out loud.
It's incredible.
So we talked about the retirees. On the other end of the spectrum, we have our students. And so you fought to keep interest rates low for student loans, something especially important in New Hampshire, as we have some of the most expensive colleges in the nation. What else do you think can be done to lower the cost of college in New Hampshire so that we can retain our young students and they'll stay here?
Well, it's a problem, and I worry for future generations of teachers, frankly, because the education is too expensive in comparison to the compensation. Mm-hmm. So New Hampshire does have among the highest rates of school loans. Several immediate steps that we can take. Number one is to make sure that students can renegotiate their loan, mm-hmm. and I've sponsored that bill. You can renegotiate a house mortgage, you can renegotiate a car payment, you should be able to renegotiate, consolidate all your loans, get down to the very lowest rate, which is around 3%, and stretch it out over time so the payment isn't, you know, $500 or $1,000 a month and you'll never own a home.
Right.
Get it down to, you know, $100 or $200 that you could fit into your family budget over time. So that's number one. Number two, lower the costs of education. And there are some really promising programs. And I was delighted to learn that New Hampshire at UNH, at the university system, has a program for free tuition for families who are Pell eligible. And it turns out there are 800 students that have taken advantage of this. And I think it's something we need to get the word out broadly that that's happening. Other schools have done the same. And then we need to make sure that we have robust student aid programs. This administration has tried to eliminate Pell Grants, Perkins Grants, loan repayment programs. And they're just, it's as though they're anti-college. They're just making it so much more expensive, so much more out of reach for middle-class families. And the divide will continue to grow. Having said that, I do want to invest in people who are not planning to go to college. And I think as Democrats, we made a mistake last cycle talking about free college when that was interpreted by some families who weren't planning to send their kids to college that they would end up paying for somebody else's child to go for free. Nothing is ultimately free, right? So I have been very focused on the career and technical high school path and the community college path for people, whether it's advanced manufacturing or healthcare coming out of high school with an LNA, the entry level nursing degree, or microelectronics, federal funding that I've brought to Nashua Community College. People now are coming out of a two-year program in advanced manufacturing, going directly into jobs for $55,000 in benefit and plus benefits. And those jobs are readily available in New Hampshire. So we've got the lowest unemployment, I think the second lowest unemployment in the country, 2.7%. We're the envy of many states, but what that means is we need training for these 21st century jobs that are available. Let the high school students do the fast food and learn how to show up on time and you know, have a job, but let's make sure that people have a career path that's readily available that doesn't require 4 years of college education.
And you know, as educators, we see that every day. Not everybody's going to go to college. Some are going to take different paths, and it's just what it is.
Well, and it's fine. And the reality is there's no rush. You know, I can remember my parents saying this college is wasted on the young. There is no rush that people can come out of high school. I mentioned the LNA degree. There are programs in auto mechanics that are highly sophisticated now. There are programs in machining and CNC machines and, you know, this microelectronics that I mentioned. And they can get a job, get their lives stabilized, get make it through their early 20s, showing up every day and taking responsibility for their car payment or their phone payments, and then get to a place where they can get an apartment, live independently, and then they'll be able to take classes at the community college. And we have a wonderful articulation agreement. If it goes well at the community colleges, then they can come out and do that third and fourth year of a four-year degree without setting themselves back $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $100,000 in debt for that education.
Wonderful. So another group of educators that we represent are our ESP, our Education Support Personnel. And we have about 5,000 of those. And so something, you know, that has always been an issue for them, teachers are salaried. We receive paid leave, whether it's sick leave, you know, we receive health insurance a lot cheaper than most of the ESP can. And most of our ESPs are hourly. Amazon recently announced that they were going to start paying their workers, or they're raising the wages to $15 an hour. So do you support a national minimum wage increase so our overworked ESPs can make the same as if they worked at Amazon?
Absolutely. And, you know, I've visited companies across the state here in New Hampshire that have raised their own minimum wage. And I think it's a really important step to take. I haven't jumped directly to the $15 minimum wage because this being New Hampshire, we have a lot of small businesses that would find that difficult. 90% of our jobs in New Hampshire are small businesses, and my aim is not to put them out of business. So, but I've signed on to a bill that would get us over time to a $12 minimum wage, and I absolutely agree with raising the minimum wage. And again, back to the skills training, making sure that it is a win-win proposition for the employer, including the school system, and the employee. So many jobs now are require computer intelligence. They require the skills training. the soft skills that we talked about, the innovation and problem solving and working in groups of people and managing, that by helping people to have those skills and do their job well, whether it's driving a bus and worrying about the children on the bus mm-hmm. and their psychology and their frame of mind when mm-hmm. they are with you, what's happening in their home. There's so many things going on there. The paraprofessionals that you have in your classroom. I'm on the agriculture committee. We work with the food service people about the quality of the food and the nutrition and also not just the school lunches, but the breakfast programs, the weekend backpack programs. Right. So there's so much more to these jobs now. Mm-hmm. And I think through training, we can give people the skills for this 21st century workplace mm-hmm. and the value will be there and the wages need to come up to recognize that.
Yeah. So one final question. I know you've had a great working relationship with outgoing Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter. And I'm sure I already know the answer to this, but are you looking forward to working with our new first Congressional District Congressman, Chris Pappas?
Absolutely. I'm very, very excited about it. Carol has been a great partner. We've worked on a lot of issues together, and I'm super excited about Chris, what he brings, the vitality, the energy, the youth, but also his perspective. He's an employer. He's worked with, I love the ads with the people that are so loyal working at that company. Yeah. He knows how to value people, how to give them the benefits that they need and deserve for their modern family life. Chris has obviously highly intelligent. I've been so impressed with him on the campaign. But he has a unique perspective, having served the treasurer of the county, served in the executive council, served in the state legislature. I think we will be very strong as a delegation. We're excited to welcome him into our formerly all-female delegation,
right.
But he'll be our first gay member of Congress, and we're excited about that. And I think we'll work very well with Molly Kelly as governor.
Yes, I agree. Did you have anything else you wanted to add in?
No, thank you very much for having me. And I'm just a fan of the public schools, and I think we should speak highly of the public schools and tout the achievements of that socialization that's so critical. And we need to value our teachers and our staff and make sure that you have the supports that you need so that you don't have to cut into your own paycheck to be doing your own job.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.